Paul Duane's Irish folk horror film, All You Need Is Death, is now playing in select theaters and on digital from XYZ Films. Beyondfest says, "You'll never be able to hear another folk tune without shivering in fear." David Jenkins of Little White Lies calls it grimly refreshing and confident. You can tell that everyone involved in the making really understood and appreciated the assignment. Watch the genuinely horrifying All You Need Is Death, available everywhere you buy movies.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Don't touch that dial. You're tuned in to the Dread Podcast Network.
Welcome to Development Hell. For every horror movie that hits VOD, countless others end up DOA. Development Hell is the podcast dedicated to unearthing these cursed horror productions. We're going to find out what went wrong and then decide if these titles still stand a shot at the green light. I am your host, Josh Korngut. I am the managing editor of Dread Central. I am also a filmmaker in Toronto, Canada. This podcast is a proud member of the Dread Podcast Network. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to a brand new episode of Development Hell. Today, we are talking vampires, we are talking Nosferatu, we are talking Robert Eggers' Nosferatu. The guest is, we can hear her, Mary Beth McAndrews. How's it going?
Hey, that's great. I'm happy to be here.
Mary Beth has been here a couple times before. She is the Dread Central editor-in-chief, my boss. Mary Beth, how's it going? Can you reintroduce yourself for the Development Hell audience?
I can. So, like Josh said, I am the editor-in-chief of Dread Central. That's pretty cool. I work with Josh. Mm-hmm. He's our managing editor. I have been writing about horror for a long time, and I love it very much. And I really love vampires. And I'm very excited to talk about this because it's vampires and German expressionism, and it's going to be really cool.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one. I had never seen Nosferatu before. I have never seen Nosferatu before today. Had you ever seen it before?
Yeah, but a long time ago, so I remembered nothing.
Okay, so we've been refreshed, and I'm excited to jump into it. Today, we're going to discuss a couple of things. We're going to hit up Nosferatu, the 1922 film. Ooh, we're going to talk about Dracula, the novel, but probably not. Maybe Mary Beth is going to talk to us about German Expressionism. I think I want to get into a little bit about the Nosferatu. I cannot say. I'm never going to be able to say the title of this movie.
It's so incredible.
Just, like, stop judging me, okay? Until you judge yourself, glass houses.
I do that every day.
Yeah.
Off to a banger start.
This is going good. I'm so sad for tomorrow, Josh, editing this. Hi, Josh. The Nosferatu cinematic legacy. What does that mean? I want to talk a little bit about Robert Eggers, not because I know much about him, but because I want to learn from you, Mary Beth. And then last but not least, we're going to get real deep into the Robert Eggers' Nosferatu remake that has yet to see the light of day. Would it be cool if I gave like a little seminar on the original Nosferatu film?
Please, I would absolutely love a little seminar about this movie.
Well, Nosferatu, a symphony of horror, was a 1922 silent German expressionist horror film directed by F.W. Murnau. It was also starring Mr. Max Schreck as Count Orlok, a vampire. We have the wife character played by Greta Schroeder. and the estate agent played by Gustav von Wagenheim. That sounds right.
That sounds right.
So this was a film produced by Prana Film and was a very unauthorized, very unofficial adaptation of Bram Stoker's Dracula. It was a ballsy, just complete ripoff, complete hijack. I guess I respect that, but they did get their comeuppance a little bit down the road. So because it was such an illegal crime, they had to change some of the character names from the Dracula book. So they, instead of Count Dracula, we've got Count Orlok.
Okay, spooky. But I will say Orlok is a really good name.
I was thinking it could be a good drag name would be Count Horlock.
What do you think of that? God.
Like in earlier today.
I love that.
And you always have to kind of commit to the aesthetic, but why wouldn't you want to anyways?
Oh, I already have. Oh man.
You can also use it for any kind of burlesque performance if you want it.
I was
going
to say, I love doing sexy horror burlesque, so I might have to steal that.
Oh my God, I would love for you to do Count Horlock. I won't even sue you like the Stoker State sued this film. So yeah, as I was saying, the Stoker State absolutely sued this adaptation. And due to a court ruling, basically all or a whole bunch of copies of this film were completely destroyed.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so it was almost eradicated from cinema history. Luckily, a few copies ended up surviving, and the film came to be regarded as a true masterpiece.
That's what a wild history.
I know. They're just like, we don't care. We're just going to steal it. Maybe no one will notice. The internet doesn't exist yet, right? How will anyone ever know? They found out.
Have you ever read the book?
Wild. Yeah, I've read Dracula. Have you?
Oh, yes.
I have. It's a spooky, spooky affair. I love Dracula 2, the sequel. No, just kidding. And I also, it's my favorite Universal monster movie. It's so, I find it scary. Yeah.
Can I go on a mini tangent about Dracula as found footage?
I'm ready.
Are you ready for this?
Yes, we're prepared.
Okay. So Dracula is an epistolary novel, which means it is told through a series of letters. It's not written like a normal narrative book. It's written through a series of letters where, you know, Mina Harker and Jonathan are corresponding about what's going on in their lives. And the epistolary novel is a precursor to found footage because, again, you're reading documents, discovered documents compiled into a volume. So it's like you're rewatching events unfold in front of you like in a found footage movie. So I just think it's really cool that we had a version of this kind of like voyeuristic peeking into some like people's lives in horror before there was even the kind of the subgenre in film.
That's super cool. I never put two and two together, but so not Salem's Lot by Stephen King, but he wrote a short story in the same sort of universe as Salem's Lot. I think it was a prequel called Jerusalem's Lot was the name of the short story.
Night Shift, I think.
Yes, and it does exactly what you're talking about. I believe it's all through letters, and that's cool. And I think they made it into a TV show last year called Chapel Wait. Did you watch it?
Oh, I didn't watch it, but that, yes, I remember it.
Mm-hmm. Adrian Brody.
Yes.
I'm okay with him.
I'm very okay with him.
I think he's hot.
I think he's so hot.
Do you think I could like give a little bit of a spiel about what Nosferatu the film was about?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I just wanted to jump
into the novel first
before.
No, I'm glad that you did. We needed to get something interesting within all of this highbrow knowledge. 1838, in a fictional German town, where this character by the name of Thomas Hutter is sent to Transylvania by his employer to visit a client by the name of Count Orlok, who plans to buy this home across from Hutter's own house.
Casual.
It's a setup that we see a lot in like gothic horror. It reminds me, because I just rewatched recently The Woman in Black. Doesn't it kind of have the basically the same premise? Are you familiar with that one?
No, I don't think it does, though. Well,
kind of like a shared trope of like young city gentlemen getting sent off.
Oh, 100%. It's always like this guy who is like a step above sick Victorian child. And he's always like about to be married to the woman of his dreams who's like kind of out of his league.
And he's hot though. I feel like he's always so hot. Hutter's hot in this movie. Did you feel that way?
I thought he was cute.
Listen, luscious eyeballs, luscious hair, beautiful man. And there was another beautiful man cast eventually in the Robert Eggers remake. And we're going to have to get to that eventually because it's a casting choice that I find especially bizarre for Eggers. But we'll get there. Calm down. Yeah, so basically Hutter goes out to Transylvania, goes to the spooky castle on a hill. There's a scary guy with like big eyeballs and a scary nose and scary fingers. And he's like, I guess I'll sleep here. And then, of course, the guy with the scariness like bites him in the night and is like, oops, I'm a vampire. For some reason, they get on a boat together and they go back home. And then the spooky man that may be an allegory for Jewish people will get there, bites his wife, then explodes because of sunshine. And then everything's okay. Was that accurate?
Yeah.
I think that was accurate.
That was accurate.
I felt good about it. There was a remake. Are you familiar with this in 1979? Did you know about this?
The Werner Herzog one.
Yes. And the poster art for this 1979 remake, also a German film, as you said, by Herzog. That's the art that I kind of always had imprinted in my mind. Do you know
that? Me too.
Yeah.
I was looking on Shudder, like, to watch it. And I forgot about the Herzog one, and they have both of them on Shudder. And I was like, shit.
Mm-hmm.
The Herzog poster is the one I always think of, but I don't know why. I think it's just so iconic and it's so bright.
It's so iconic.
And striking.
It's so good.
Oh, it's so
striking. And it looks like it could be from 1922.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think we grew up our whole lives maybe assuming that was a poster for the 1922 film. Absolutely, it is not.
Do you mind if I jump into German Expressionism for a second?
I would love if you would.
Cool. So German Expressionism is a obviously German artistic movement that took place like before World War, I think between World War I and World War II. So it started in like the 1920s, and it was like a reaction to like uprising fascism and a way of rejecting societal norms and kind of no longer portraying things with realism, but taking the world and warping it into something uncanny and strange. So, you know, if you've ever seen The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, which is another classic German expressionist film, that's very much that, with like all the buildings are in weird perspectives and look very sharp. And there's a lot of like very dark under eye makeup to like really emphasize eyes and like kind of play into the horror. And German expressionism was basically like the introduction of how to use shadows in a really fascinating way. And I think it's like, it is obviously like from then on, we've seen how lighting is now used in horror, and German expressionism can take a lot of credit for how horror decided to use lighting and use it in such an effective way.
Very cool. Yeah.
It's and like really
kind
cool.
of forced perspective for like really weird, narrow alleys and just like messing with your brain in a kind of, yeah, gothic way. Do you remember when you first encountered German expressionism? Was there like a first moment?
Yeah. So in college, I took a horror film class, which was really cool. My sophomore year of college, and we watched The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. And that one is like the most quintessential German expressionism film. Nosferatu is too, but it's like a little bit more. It's not totally like forced perspective and like totally creepy at first. But yeah. Were you familiar with it at all?
Yes, I was familiar with it through definition, and I had seen Caligari.
Okay.
But other than that, it was just like something people would say around me, and I didn't have a lot of understanding. Although I did know, I'm ashamed to admit it at this point, but I'm a big Tim Burton fan, and I did know that German Expressionism is basically, you know, where he was born from. There would be no Tim Burton without German Expressionism. Like, it's just so hand in hand. Are you a Tim Burton person?
Yeah.
I know. Well, listen, we can like, I think we can give a little bit of time to talking about Tim Burton right now, because I think it's sort of where German Expression led in the popular culture today. Why, for someone that might not know, why are we being so coy about the topic of Tim Burton? Why is he embarrassing now?
Well, he's embarrassing because this is the comment I always think about. It was like, I base my movies off of my dreams, and in my dreams, it's only white people. So why would I put people of color in any of my movies? Mm-hmm. Like a direct response to people being like, why are your movies so white?
It's very fucked up. It's a very fucked up comment. And also like, your dreams suck, buddy. You know, I don't know. Also, he said some pretty fucked up stuff about race in his films. I remember he had a quote about how in blaxploitation, no one is pressured to use white actors. So why should he have to like use people of color? And his logic is very racist and also confusing. So he's a problematic favorite at this point in time.
And yeah. Also, like, his really most sad. Recent movies have all sucked anyway.
When was the last time Tim Burton made a good movie? I've got an answer. I'm wondering if you have one, too. Or would you like me to say mine?
You say yours.
It's got to be Big Fish. It's got to be Big Fish from 2003.
Yeah. Because what was after Big Fish?
Well, we had, like, Sweeney Todd, which for me was a no.
Oh, I liked it. Well, it's not good, but I liked it. It was fun.
Yeah, I find it's, like, kind of, like, polarizing more so than most of the recent work, which is just a no. Like, we also had Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, big time no. Mm-mm. Although, you know. Yeah, big time no. There was also Alice in Wonderland and all of, like, Dumbo and the weird Disney movies.
Oh,
I guess
yeah.
Big Eyes wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen. There was a good Lana Del Rey song in there.
Oh, yeah.
But, like...
Oh, God, remember when he did Dark Shadows?
Oh, he ruined Dark Shadows.
It was terrible.
And on paper, like, it made sense to have him do it. I'm a big Dark Shadows fan, so I was really disappointed when that came out because, yeah. Ugh. Oh, and the Peregrine Home for Peculiar Bitches. That was not for me.
Eva Green is so fucking hot, too, and that movie ruined it.
But is she interesting? Because, like, I can't think of a single movie where I was, like, I was really taken.
By from her?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Like, what's a movie that she's interesting in?
Well, she's incredible in Penny Dreadful. That horror series on Showtime. She's the main character. Oh, I'm obsessed. And, like, Josh Hartnett is in it as, like, a sexy werewolf. It's just, like, it's a bisexual's dream.
Yeah, I mean, that duo is a bisexual cornucopia right there.
It is.
Very beautiful.
It is a bisexual cornucopia. That is exactly it. Oh, my God. I should do a list for work about best bisexual pairings in horror movies. Anyway.
Oh, I like that. Because, honestly, you could just put anything you wanted to as long as you backed it up properly. Because it's vague enough that you could do anything. I like it.
People really and also, like it. They'll really understand it.
I should probably cut this. But, like, now it's my mission to do more sex stuff. So that fits right into that for me.
Oh my God. I'm so glad. I'm so excited. I love sexy horror is the shit. Okay, and speaking of sexy horror, Bram Stoker's Dracula. We've talked about this a million times, like one-on-one, but Bram Stoker's Dracula, the 1992 film by Francis Ford Coppola, is the sexiest movie and horror movie of all time.
It's so sexy.
I'll defend that until the end of days.
And everyone always complains about Keanu Reeves in that movie because I guess his accent is inconsistent or something.
It's
but,
not good.
But he's so sexy.
He's so sexy. And he's the crazy foursome with the wives and it's so weird.
Yeah. And like that role is fluff. That role is twink fluff. So like honestly, at the end of the day, who cares? Let him be. Let him be his twink. Oh my God. I saw on the internet a term that really repulsed me. And I'd never heard before, which is twunk, which is like a you know automatically what it stands
yes.
for.
Yes.
Someone's called someone's dad a twunk. I forgot. It was really upsetting for me. Which I am not. I am twunk. I'm twunk floof. Anywho, yeah, I want to take 3 seconds to talk about Dracula as a thing because that adaptation, so incredible. Probably my favorite incarnation of Dracula.
I agree.
It's so good. Another personal favorite Dracula, I guess, moment or product out there. One of my favorite musicians of all time, Mr. Philip Glass, like kind of minimalist composer, I guess, did like rescored the Universal Dracula film. And then they re-released it with, oh my God, it is, if you're out there, and I know you are, find the Philip Glass Dracula score. It's going to make you feel spooky, and it's going to make you feel cute. And you're going to be walking around, and you're going to think, like, I'm spooky and I'm cute. Listen to it. It's really good.
I love the vibe. I love being spooky and cute.
Yeah, which you often are. You're often pairing the two. So.
Thank you. Wow.
Any other like Dracula moments that like stood out to us in our upbringing or parodies, adaptations, anything that like comes to you?
I just love vampires. I just think about all the vampire movies I watch. Like Dracula, obviously, like the Bram Stoker one, which I saw at the age of like 13, which was inappropriate.
Perfect. No, it's perfect.
I think that's the biggest one for me, honestly.
That's I'm rewatching Buffy right now, which I recommend for anybody that's maybe thinking about doing that. In on their season 5 premiere, they do like a whole Dracula moment. Oh, any Buffy fans out there, you know what I'm talking about. They didn't do it well though. Sorry. Oh. Sorry, Buffy. By the time you're at a season 5 of anything, like, people are tired, okay?
It's true.
People are doing their best. They're waking up early, but they're tired. And I respect that. I don't know if I want to get... Now I'm scared. Now I'm getting nervous. But I brought it up to you one-on-one before this, and I think that I do want to dip into this a little bit. Because as I was watching Nosferatu today and doing some research on it, as like a constantly suspicious paranoid Jew, I was looking at it and I was thinking, is this like allegory for Jewness? Anytime something from this era has a character with like a big crooked hook nose who's also kind of bald
and it's scary,
like, it freaks me out. Also, whenever they're like half of his plot is he's like selling and buying property, which is like also a very classically, right? Isn't it like he's like investing and stuff? And so I was like, is there some kind of weirdness with Judaism here? Because I don't know if the listeners know I am Jewish myself, so I always kind of have an ear to the ground when it comes to anti-Semitism. And it does seem like nothing is official, but there's a lot of speculation that Nosferatu and also subsequently the novel Dracula might be tackling the issue of the other and have possibly anti-Semitic undertones. So you're seeing this with the character's appearance. He's got long claw-like fingernails. He's got the hooked nose, large bald head. This is sort of what the stereotypes of the Jewish caricature were around this time. And so it's kind of hard to believe that it was completely separated from this. You said to me, though, that the director of this film is known to have not been a Nazi. Can you tell me a little bit more about that, or do you not have, and I can cut that out?
No, I'm just a little bit like, it seemed like he had like, I think a couple of the actors he works with were Jewish, and he was said to be like friendly with Jews. And, you know,
this is quotes.
Truly. Like, no explicit, you know, like when you, and this period is like very much in the beginning of World War One, like, I mean, of not World War One, but like the fascist rise in Germany and the Nazis. And so one question is like, how prevalent were those images before this time period? Because I don't know. Like, what?
I don't know either.
Because
this is maybe like, a little early too.
So that's like, what I was wondering. Like, what's like the timeline? Because I cannot fucking remember, because obviously I know there was a ton of horrific Jewish propaganda in that time period. But I'm
sure it was bad.
This might be a minor it might be a precursor, but like by a very close margin. So it's kind of hard to divorce the two. But I have a feeling that he didn't realize what he was doing, which is hard to believe.
It may have been subconscious.
Early enough in like the propaganda about that stuff, maybe.
Yeah, and maybe it truly was undertones. Like maybe he, like even within his own like subconscious, it was an undertone. As you were saying, there was this writer by the name of Kevin Jackson who, unquote, says that the director Murnau was friendly with and protective of a number of Jewish men and women throughout his life. And I'm like, okay, I guess good for him. And this guy also notes that this director was homosexual and then kind of jumps to the conclusion, unquote, would be presumably more sensitive to the persecution of a subgroup inside the larger German society. And what I have to say to that is, as a homosexual myself, some of the most hateful nightmarish, frightening entities I've ever met have been gays. So I don't know if being a gay is necessarily going to make you sympathetic to the plight of other discriminated groups, but maybe at this time, maybe we were working together. Who knows?
So I looked up Jewish propaganda history. So sorry to RIP to my church history, because I was curious. A lot of it started in 1933.
Oh, down the 10 years later.
Yeah. And again, I am not disagreeing that this could, like, mm-hmm. about that interpretation. I was just more curious about, like, that era.
I'm not super familiar
with, like, that era of history. It makes me sad. Which is, like, so stupid, but it's just a lot.
I don't know. There's truly no basis for it. And, like, as I was watching it, I was like, I have no basis for feeling this way, but I feel this way. And then immediately, like, the internet was... everyone on the internet was like, we also have nothing to back this up, but we feel this way too. So that's kind of the energy. And I think it's just due to the appearance and I guess also the profession of Count Orlok.
Yeah. 100%, because especially now when we have all that information, it's like, But I wonder, I don't know if this is weird to say, but I wonder if, like, even Nosferatu could have been inspiration for some of that stuff.
Oh, wow. That, like, I mean, snake eating its tail to some degree, but maybe.
Again, I have no real basis to back that up at all. But
who's to say, like, just because the intention from the artist wasn't there, that, like, certain people can't invent it afterwards and say, like, come to their own conclusions and maybe want to read anti-Semitism in it and then, like, because they're anti-Semitic, it's hard to say for sure what was going on back then. But Germany was facing 20 rocky years ahead. So nothing is impossible.
A lot going on
in Germany. But they did give us German Expressionism. And I'm grateful. There's so much more we can or could or would talk about with Nosferatu. But I don't know. I kind of feel like getting to the main event, which is the Robert Eggers remake, because this motherfucker has been in the works for 7 long years and still has not, I know, seen the light of day. Before I pitched you this topic, I'm assuming you knew that Robert Eggers had his hat in the ring for a Nosferatu film?
Yes. Oh, yes.
How did you feel about that when you found out? How did that feel to you?
I was really excited, actually. I feel like he is the person I'd want to make a Nosferatu movie because the movies he has made are so, like, strike the tone of the time period so well, and he's so extensive with his research in terms of costuming and, like, language and the aesthetic, but it's also so full of dread. And Nosferatu is terrifying. Like, a plague is just, like, wrecking people's lives and everything. And I really think he could do that modernized look at that kind of...
Okay, hold up. Who is Robert Eggers? Who is this girl? I don't know. I've never seen
one. Who is she?
I've seen one Robert Eggers movie. So, oh my God. Yeah, who is Robert Eggers? I'd love to know.
So Robert Eggers is one of these, like, he's in, like, the kind of same level as, like, Ari Aster, like the A24, like, elevated horror boys that kind of burst into the scene in, like, 2016, 2017. With his, when was The Witch? Hold
on. The Witch, I think, was 2015, maybe even a little earlier.
2015. Okay. I have no sense of time. I have, like, literally no sense of time.
Yeah. Before. Yeah. I just realized that today, because the very first mention of this Nosferatu remake was July 2015. And that was after The Witch had already come out or was in the process of coming out.
The Witch was 2015. Yeah. So
long ago.
I know. But that was his first movie that was, like, so fucking creepy, and it's set in the 1700s America. So very.
I was gonna say the woods.
The woods, yes, but yeah. A very crazy religious family's cast out into the creepy woods, and things go awry. And then we have The Lighthouse, which is two men trapped in a lighthouse are kind of gay together. A lot of farting.
Aww.
And it's, again, like 4:3 aspect ratio, black and white, period.
Do they like ever kiss or anything? Like, do we get anything?
Almost. Like, they like have a lot of like very tender moments where they like, embrace together.
Okay.
And dance.
Would I like it? You know me better than anyone at this point. Would I like The Lighthouse?
I think you would appreciate it. I don't know if you would love it.
Okay. I liked The Witch. Like, solid B+ for Josh.
Then you're not going to like The Lighthouse.
Oh, interesting.
I don't think. I don't know. I like The Lighthouse, but I love The Witch better. But then he also just did The Northman that just came out a couple weeks ago, which is, again, another period-specific movie, Vikings, but this is by Focus Features, and it had a huge budget, like bigger than he's had before.
Mm-hmm.
Bigger than he's had before. And it's really good. It's like a Viking revenge epic that it's just, mwah, chef's kiss.
I would say that's a good summation of Mr. Eggers. I always get his name wrong. I always call him David Eggers. And
I call him Roger.
I'm probably... So. Yeah, you do. We always call him David or Roger Eggers at work, and it's always a mistake. No.
We always joke that one day we're going to talk to him and we're going to fuck up his name. He's going to be like, what is wrong with you?
No, we are. And I'm going to call it Nosferatu. I've never said Nosferatu right once in my life.
You have a couple times. I'm really proud of you, actually.
It's so hard.
I'm proud. I'm
what
proud
did I had some good fake ones for it. What was like? What is the one I you? No, it was like nose something poo.
Hold on, let me find it.
Yeah, please find it. It was my finest work. I've never been such a talented. I'm vamping until she finds it. Maybe I'm overhyping
nose
it.
Nose to ass poo.
Not as good, but also it's better.
It's really good. Nose to ass.
Wait, say it again. Nose to ass poo. Oh no. I literally just turned my computer off. Can you still hear me? Oh my god. My screen is off. I have to put in my password. What if everything's bad?
You're here.
Hey, it's going to be fine, actually.
We're good. Everything's fine.
Oh my god, I put in my password wrong. I'm never going to be okay. Okay, I'm back.
Wow.
I'm going to keep that all in for authenticity. Actually.
I love it. This is the way. This is the reality of podcasting. It's just 90% panic.
Yeah, 90% panic. And 10% gay. How was Bjork? And how was Nicole Kidman? The only two reasons I'd want to go see The Northman.
Okay, so Bjork is in it for all of 3 minutes. But she's incredible. That's okay. She's incredible.
The Lena Quigley of The Northmen. Oh. Are you okay? Oh no, I killed Mary Beth. It was only one heartbeat away from the crown.
That's the most incredible joke I've ever heard. Oh my god, oh, that was so good. Thank you.
Our audience don't even know why.
I know.
It's gonna like neuter the joke, but why is it funny?
Because Lena Quigley is a queen who appears for 2 seconds in so many horror movies and like just gets a check for showing up for like literally 3 yeah. lines, and it's the best. I love that for her. It's incredible.
I'm sure she doesn't show up. I'm sure she has a green screen in her garage. I celebrate her more than I celebrate almost anyone else on this planet.
I agree. I love it.
Did you know about her like 1980s like sexy horror workout videos?
No.
Yeah, it was like post Jane Fonda, but make it sexy and naked, I think, to some degree as well.
Oh my god. Oh, what a queen.
What a queen. We have to feature that. Yeah. We love you. Okay. Do you feel ready? Do you feel prepared? Do you feel stable enough to dip into Robert Eggers' remake of Nosferatu?
Yes.
So back in July of 2015, Deadline reported that Studio 8, never heard of it. What is Studio 8? Do you know what Studio 8 is?
Nope.
Okay, so in 2015, Deadline reports that Studio 8 and Eggers were on track to produce this remake of Nosferatu. At the time, Eggers had only produced The Witch, But it definitely, like, if I was a 2015 Hollywood producer and I saw The Witch, I'd be like, give him $5 million and let's make Nosferatu. Yeah, agreed. So, yeah, it was reported as early as 7 years ago. And according to the Deadline report, it was going to be a visceral adaptation of the 1922 silent film and bring back the horrific vampire of Eastern European folklore to the screen. We had Jay Van Hoy and Lars Knutson Parts and no, I'm going to say this all again. We had Jay Van Hoy and Lars Knutson. No. Okay. The production company Parts and Labor were going to produce. So cool. And then about a year later, okay, we can do this. We're so good. A year later, IndieWire reported around November of 2016 that Eggers was surprised that Nosferatu was actually going to be his second film, so much so that they quoted him saying, "It feels ugly and blasphemous and egomaniacal and disgusting for a filmmaker in my place to do Nosferatu next. I was really planning on waiting a while, but that's how fate shook out." What? What is wrong with this man? This sounds like someone that doesn't want to make this movie and is, like, making weird excuses. How do you feel?
It just sounds like such a pretentious art boy thing to say. You know what I mean? It sounds like such an excuse to be like, no one wants to make this.
Egomaniacal. But he's truly a genius and has presented us some incredible movies. But he's a nerd. So,
huge nerd. Like, all of his movies are based on ridiculous amounts of research about the period and getting things, like, perfectly correct. And, like, it's really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And, big, like, time. Only a giant nerd could do that. And I respect that. And he's probably, like, just like, I have just poured so much shit into this movie.
Yeah, and we're gonna get there, but that seems to be the energy that, like, there's been a lot of blood, sweat, and tears put into this remake.
Maya Robert,
and 7 years later, it doesn't seem really like it's on track to camera anytime soon.
Yeah.
So that was 2016. Fast forward to 2017, and Variety reports that The Witch star, Anya Taylor-Joy, fresh off of the movie Split at the time, was also going to star in the Nosferatu remake, but in an undisclosed role. How do we feel about this lady?
I love her. She's incredible. She is gorgeous, mm-hmm. and she is so talented. I'm obsessed with her.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with her too. She's just so alien, which is kind of what I'm looking for in my, like, in my lady leads.
Yes.
I want, like, an alien quality.
It was funny. Steve and I saw The Northman, and he was like, Anya Taylor-Joy looks like a fish.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, she looks like a beautiful
Which I love
bitch.
That for her.
A beautiful mermaid.
Oh, like Aqua Marine Thunder Force 5000.
Oh, my God.
Although, pretty amazing, but she has to be in the right stuff. In what?
I forgot she was in Split.
Oh, in Split. She's great in Split, to my memory.
I did not like Split, but she was really good in it.
I remember thinking Split was what Split was, I guess, whatever that may mean. Yeah, it was problematic and kind of weird and, let's face it, stupid, but I think I was entertained. What was your problem with Split?
I really didn't like the end where it was like she gets saved because she went through horrific sexual abuse.
Ooh, I don't remember that.
Yeah. Like, she survived because the character with DID was basically like, because you've seen trauma and terrible things, like, I don't need to kill you or some crazy shit like that. And I was like, I don't like how that feels about, like, what being traumatized makes you into.
Okay,
I don't know.
M. Night Shyamalan.
It was just like, thanks. It just didn't feel good.
And this is why all of these legacy filmmakers absolutely should be required to hire a female or lady-identified co-writer for all of their scripts.
Correct.
Guillermo del Toro does this, and I think it really helps. It certainly cannot hurt, I think, at this point in time.
I agree.
So let 100%. These men continue to make movies, I guess, but, like, hire a lady to help them out.
I'm here, guys. If you want any help, I'm happy to help.
I have her email address, so just hit my DMs. Oh my god, I'm pimping you out.
I love it.
I'm sorry.
No, I love it. You got to cut.
So it seems like once a year we're getting these mysterious updates on this remake. In 2019, we get another one. Speaking to Den of Geek, we get another bizarro quote from Eggers, and this time he says, "Look, I spent so many years and so much time, just so much blood on it, it would be a real shame if it didn't happen." Eventually, he also adds, "But also, I don't know, maybe Nosferatu doesn't need to be made again, even though I've spent so much time on that." So this is the second time he's been quoted saying something along the lines of, like, I don't know if I'm supposed to be making this movie. Or is it even appropriate for me to be making it? Yeah, it does kind of come across as excusey, though. Like, maybe he's just not feeling it. Not feeling the fantasy.
Or other, he's having a hard time getting his studio to feel the fantasy.
Which is weird to me, because this is before the flop of The Northman. Oh, I kind of feel like it's true. Like, this is when he was, really a golden child. Not to say that he's not anymore, but he's definitely, I'm guessing he's not due to the nature of the beast. You know, you get in trouble if your film doesn't make money.
Yeah.
So sad. I also think, and we'll get to this more at the end, but the fact that his recent big budget action movie didn't perform the way that people were hoping it would, it may be the reason that he goes back to doing smaller A24 horror movies.
Yeah.
It may even be the reason that Nosferatu does get made in the long run, but we'll see.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of speculation about who Anya Taylor-Joy was going to be playing. If you had to guess, who do you think it was? Do you think there's a chance it was Nosferatu?
Oh, I always thought it would be Mina. Or, yeah, she would be the lady.
Absolutely. I do not see Eggers gender swapping the roles.
Look, I love Eggers, but I don't think he's the person to do a gender swap Nosferatu. Like, I just don't.
I mean, I'd be happy if he did. I wouldn't be, like, I think I'd be excited. I just don't see him doing it.
No, I don't either.
He seems kind of like, am I really off base by calling him a bit of a traditionalist?
I was going to say the same thing, I think, a little bit.
Yeah. So, just based on hearing him talk in interviews and his references and stuff, I think that he would want to go a little bit closer to old school. Which is, as you're saying, I think maybe okay for someone of his ilk. Speaking to IndieWire, he also said that, this is the thing, I don't want to throw around titles because I was throwing around my titles last time. And then he insults Guillermo del Toro, basically by saying something along the lines that Guillermo del Toro throws around titles for projects that he wants to make that don't end up getting made, like, all of the time. And he doesn't want to do that. Like, if he's going to announce a title, he actually wants it to be something that's going to get made.
So shady.
He calls him Saint Guillermo del Toro. Doesn't this feel shady?
Yeah, it's
shady.
Doesn't this feel rude?
What is your deal? Well, how dare you speak ill of my husband like that? Honestly, get his name out of your mouth. do I have to cut that?
No, I don't think you do.
Okay, but seriously, don't talk ill about Guillermo del Toro. Also, if it wasn't for Guillermo del Toro, I wouldn't have 30 episodes of this podcast.
We celebrate the fact that he does this.
100%, the king of development hell. Like, there's endless opportunities for episodes for him, featuring though, him.
Honestly,
I do too. It also just proves even further that, like, he is me and I am him, and one day I will be him. You know what I mean?
Yes. So, I'm very excited for that for you.
One of the most recent updates that makes it even more clear that maybe this project could be canceled was in a recent article in The New Yorker, where it was disclosed that there was a very famous pop star that was cast as a lead role, if not the lead role, in Nosferatu. So in The New Yorker, Eggers basically admits that they were going to start filming in Prague and everything was ready to go. And at the very last second, it was halted because Harry Styles backed out at the last second. Eventually, he would go on to confess that Harry Styles was not going to be playing Nosferatu, that he would be playing Hutter, which I actually think is great casting. I don't know if this kid can act. I haven't seen any of his movies.
Have you
seen him act in anything?
Dunkirk.
Yeah.
I don't know.
How was he in that?
Fine.
I there's never a world where I ever would have seen Dunkirk, so it's impossible for me to know.
I only like saw it in passing because Steve was watching it. Steve loves war movies, and I hate them. So
I cannot do them. Mm-hmm. But I do get the sense that this kid could be a good actor. He seems like he's got good stage presence. Does that whole David Bowie thing.
But it's also like such a good move to, like, this is the world we live in. Like, if you cast a pop star, you're going to make, like, so much more money because everyone who knows him is going to flop. Like, flock to the movie theater and see it like 65 times.
And, like, we know people love Harry Styles. Harry Styles is not going away.
I don't understand. I don't, like, dislike him. I just, like, stan culture scares the shit out of me.
I kind of know what you mean because it's unhinged. As someone that participates in stan culture to some degree, it's like, we're violent.
You are.
Like, we're not thinking straight and... I think there's animals. Trauma involved, and you're I can't feral. Exactly tell you to what degree.
You're fucking feral creatures.
Yeah, we're fucked. I think for when it comes to Harry Styles, obviously it's all down to One Direction and like a certain generation being obsessed with One Direction as children and then not letting go and then sort of digging deep as adults with his solo career.
That's so weird.
It is weird. I want to support the Harry Styles as a person that never cared about One Direction. It just like wasn't my demo.
No.
I want to support the solo career. The aesthetics are correct.
It's true.
And like, I feel like the moves are in the right direction, but like the music's not interesting yet. And I really want it to be.
I like some of his.
Watermelon Sugar? Like what?
I was just listening to that song today, actually.
Oh, you were? I love it. It's not offensive for sure.
It's just fun. It's a good summer. It's just like, I know. It's weird. He's like, he's very much straddling this line between being weird and very commercial, which I think is fascinating.
Non-committal to gender norms, which is cool too.
It's interesting.
I'm queer baiting at its finest.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm of two thoughts there, but also like,
I'm okay with
he's
that.
Introducing some stuff to people that maybe wouldn't have been exposed to like gender fluidity kind of stuff. So, I mean, in that regard, I can respect it.
I think that he's lucky because he's coming around at the exact point in time where it's no longer risky and it's just kind of cool. But that's not his fault or whoever's making these decisions for him.
Yeah.
So, because if he was doing this, 5 years ago, it would be hugely risky and dangerous. And it just isn't now. Now it's just kind of high fashion to sort of straddle that line.
Yep.
But I like it.
I do too.
So he has this new album coming out, or maybe it is out. I don't think it's out yet. Called Harry's House.
His new album's
out. I don't know if this is a complete fact, but I'm going to run with it as though it is one. One of his like first major press moments for this new album was to be on the cover of a magazine, but instead of a music magazine, he was on the cover of Home and Garden to like really push.
I did see.
You know what I mean?
Yes, he's like digging the dirt and his like feet are out.
Yeah, it's like it's to press the concept album element is like kind of ironic and kind of like kind of an artsy move, and it makes me laugh.
I'd be okay
with him in this. Like, I don't know. I'm not anti that casting. I don't think it was. I would be surprised if Eggers came to the table saying, we have to cast Harry Styles totally or I'm out.
That was like a studio decision.
It was a studio decision, for sure.
I respect
And it seems as though Harry stepping out of the picture, he says it was to do with his like scheduling conflicts, but at the end of the day, when someone blames scheduling conflicts, do we ever really believe that? I don't really. Mm-hmm. It always kind of. Like, it could be anything, really. Yeah, and Eggers isn't happy. again, speaking with IndieWire, he's talking about how the film's fallen apart twice. He clarifies that Harry Styles was going to be Hutter and not Nosferatu. But he also starts wondering out loud if the ghost of Murnau is just telling him, stop it right now, like, you don't have the rights to make this movie. He's getting, like, kind of spiritual with it and thinking that maybe the ghosts of the original filmmakers are sort of just getting in his way. And I know it's not really what he means, but
Cursed Films Season 3.
I was actually thinking that this whole time, that, like, could this be a Cursed Films episode? And I guess it could be. Why not, honey?
Exactly.
Honey Bear, why Newt? Okay. Are we ready to conclude? Are we ready to go to conclusions territories?
I am. I'm ready.
Okay. Well, then the major question for you, and I think you know this because you've been here before. Are we going to get to see the Eggers version or not? We get to decide, ultimately, if it's going to happen. Like, we're the bigwigs. We have the money, honey.
Yeah.
So we get to decide. So we have to be very careful with our answer. And I'm going to give this one to you. Is the Eggers version of Nosferatu ever going to happen?
I think it is. I'm manifesting.
You're manifesting this destiny?
Yes, okay. I am. Okay.
This is A Course in Miracles, and we're going to miraculize it. Okay, cool. I just would like to see Eggers go back to horror, even though I've never ventured out of horror with him because I haven't seen The Lighthouse or The Northman. I just, like, why would anyone not make horror movies? Why would you make any other genre? That's crazy to me. Come back to horror, buddy.
I agree. And I think you might, especially after the last two.
Yeah. Mary Beth. Hello. Hi. If you wanted to be found on the internet, where could you be found?
So, you can find me at MB McAndrews on Twitter. You can also find my podcast, Scarred for Life, at Scarred Podcast. Mm-hmm. And my other podcast, it's currently on hiatus, Watched Once, Never Again, which is at Wona, W-O-N-A Podcast. And, of course, Dread Central, at Dread Central.
Dread Central, what's that? Never heard of her. Crazy.
Number one horror publication on the internet, baby.
Yeah. Number one, certainly not number two. Never number two. Never heard of number two. Something, and obviously everyone in the world is hyper familiar with Dreadlines, the weekly video series from Dread Central, you know, going through all the best horror news headlines of the week. At the end of that, you always give a movie recommendation, and I kind of feel like we deserve one here today. Oh, I want, God, like, a famous Mary Beth horror movie recommendation, even though you were not given any warning, any sense that this could be humming your way. And I think that that's beautiful because now you have to be authentic.
I do.
And live in the now.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, trying to think of a good vampire movie. So it's at least a little bit on theme. Okay. Very important. I'm going to recommend one that might be a little bit controversial here.
Wow.
But I'm going to recommend Daybreakers, the 2009 vampire film starring Willem Dafoe, who should play Nosferatu in the new one due to his performance in Shadow of the Vampire, where he played Max Schreck. Mm-hmm. It's just like a really wild vampire movie that I am obsessed with. It's not, like, perfect, but it's really fun. And Ethan Hawke.
I think I saw that one in theaters, and all I remember is that they do something different. That's all I can say. Mm-hmm. Is there something, like, outside of the box when it comes to Daybreakers, or
so
does that mean anything to you?
Yeah, so it takes place in, like, not necessarily post-apocalyptic, but a society where a disease spread and gave everyone vampirism. And so the world is now, like, exclusively vampires with, like, rogue humans living on the outskirts running from vampires because the vampires are running out of blood.
Uh-oh.
They're trying to make synthetic blood. And it's, like, not working. And then they find a cure. And it's wild.
Cool. I should revisit that one because I think I saw it in theaters and never again since. And sometimes I like to think that Ethan Hawke is in it, which doesn't feel correct. He is. Okay, good.
Yeah,
so, he is. So clearly, slight memories. I'm going to have to revisit it. Was there a sequel?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. All right, well, thank you so much for joining us on yet another episode of Development Hell. We are so grateful and we love you.
I love you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Development Hell. If you enjoy this podcast, then please do us a major favor of leaving us 5 stars and writing a positive review. It really makes all the difference in the world. We'll see you next week with a brand new episode of Development Hell.
Thank you for listening to the Dread Podcast Network.